Hello, and welcome to AI Curious. My name is Jeff Wilser. I'm a journalist, I'm a human, and I am curious about AI. And I'm certainly curious about AI and education, one of the most fascinating topics in that it's really easy to imagine how they can go either way. There's the obvious concern of, oh no, AI is going to let kids take shortcuts and cheat and they'll never do work again. But there are also plenty of professors and academics who are intrigued about the educational potential of AI and how AI can help spark and spur learning, and also how AI is an important topic and tool that should be taught. I've had some listener feedback requesting this topic, and it also feels super timely and topical. Just a couple weeks ago, there was a big splashy story in the Wall Street Journal titled "Business Schools Are Going All In on AI." And arguably, the key player in that story is American University's Kogod School of Business, which has aggressively and quickly and emphatically leaned into incorporating AI into its curriculum. They are kind of moving at warp speed for academia and are this fall injecting over 20 classes that have AI in them in some capacity. So I am delighted that the two central figures of that story are today's guests on the pod. They are the very tip of the spear of AI and education. That would be David Marchik, the dean of Kogod School of Business, who kicked off and oversaw this larger initiative, and Professor Angela Virtue, the AI and tech savvy faculty member who is really in the trenches helping to shape the curriculum. So Professor Virtue and Dean Marchik plan on teaching AI again in over 20 classes next year, which is kind of a staggering quick shift. And not just tech and IT and coding classes, but the usual staples of business like marketing, accounting, finance. So what does that mean exactly? Like, how does it work? How would a school's curriculum change? Are we talking about using AI to teach marketing or teaching how marketing changes with AI? The answer is kind of yes and yes. The dean, professor, and I get into all of that. And we also, of course, tackle the question everyone has about AI education: cheating. What's the solution there? Is it even a problem? So we cover AI and education from a ton of different angles. And I very much enjoyed the conversation. And frankly, I am fascinated with this experiment. They are truly being forward-thinking and taking a pretty big swing here. Regardless of your thoughts on AI, I think you have to admire the willingness to take some chances and shake things up and incorporate and test out this new technology. It's exciting stuff. So with that said, please enjoy my conversation with American University's Kogod School of Business, Dean Dave Marchik, and Professor Angela Virtue. Dave, Angela, welcome to the pod.
Thanks so much for having us.
So let's start from the beginning. Dean, why don't you kick us off? Talk about what first motivated you to lean into AI and education.
First of all, thanks for having us. I know that this podcast is one of the best around on AI, and Inc. magazine rated it as one of the top podcasts. So we're thrilled to be here. We have speakers all the time at American University. We've had around 30 CEOs in the last 2 years. And there were a few speakers that really got me thinking about AI. I'm not a tech person. Angela will forget more about AI than I'll ever learn. But we had the president of Google, Kent Walker, came and he cited his boss saying that AI is going to be more profound than electricity or fire. And I thought, that's a bit of hyperbole, but let's say it's like 10% true. That's still pretty big. Mm-hmm. Then we had a CEO named Brett Wilson come. Brett is a venture capitalist who invests in AI. And a student asked him, will my job be replaced by AI? And Brett said, your job will not be replaced by AI, but your job could be replaced by someone who knows AI if you don't know AI. And then there's a young woman that I've kind of mentored who is in the financial industry, 26 years old, and she once said to me, we're using AI to do essentially what I did when I was 22. So I basically said, we have to run, not walk, to get AI into our curriculum so that our students know the tools of AI when they apply for jobs, when they enter the workforce, so they can be competitive. And so they're the ones that know AI, and they're not the ones that are replaced by people that know AI.
I love that. Before we dive into the particulars of what you did with AI education, Angela, what brought you into the AI world and what excited you about the idea of injecting AI into a school setting?
So I am definitely the tech side of the house. I'm a total nerd, total geek, you name it. That fits the bill on my end.
You're in the right place.
Yeah. So for me, whenever I see new tech, I always kind of try to like sniff it out a little bit to be like, is it a little overhyped? Is this the real deal? Where are we at? And I'm always leaning more towards the side of pessimism, to be brutally honest. I'm always like, it doesn't really sound great. It seems more marketing than what the tech actually can kind of withstand. And I guess back when like OpenAI really released their ChatGPT model to the public, and I was kind of poking around and starting to play with it, I was like, okay, this is interesting. At the time, I was still in industry, and like our CEO was already like, all right, what do we do with this? How do we put this in the product? Let's go, go, go. And as soon as I knew that like industry was moving that fast, everything else was going to follow. So I'm just super excited that we're at the forefront here. We're getting this integrated because, you know, all of my partners in industry still are like, we're already doing this, right? So it's super cool.
And the amazing thing is academia usually moves at a glacial pace. And here we showed that we can move fast. And that's one of the things that I'm most proud of. Again, Angela is really tech savvy. I joke that I just got Pong. But we drove the process with experts like Professor Virtue.
So I was just going to go there. You had the light bulb moment that, okay, this is real. This is coming. We need to get ahead of it. We can't just bury our heads in the sand and hope it won't be an issue, and hope it won't disrupt us too much. We have to embrace it. We have to do it now. So take us back to there. What did that look like? How did you think about injecting AI into the curriculum, about embracing it? What did that look like? What were kind of your goals when you first started?
Okay, so great question. So I'm not an academic. I'm new to academia. I'm learning. I came out of the business world. So I had this idea, and I went to the senior associate dean at our school, the Kogod School of Business, Parthamon David, and I said, we need to do something. How do we do it? And he, of course, being an academic, said, let's form a committee. And I immediately like rolled my eyes and I said, academic committees, I have this vision of 3 years and a 400-page report that nobody can read. He gave the committee 6 weeks and said, come back and give us actionable recommendations. And he went to a fellow named Aaron Carmel, who's a longstanding, very distinguished professor and a futurist. And Professor Carmel pulled together a group of 6 or 8 faculty, and they came back with a plan. And the plan said, let's incorporate AI into our curriculum in the core courses throughout every department, so marketing, finance, accounting, management, et cetera. Let's have first years take it, and then let's give students the option to go deeper with electives. And they said, let's have 20 classes incorporate AI at some level. And then they even came up with a framework that said, we'll have several types of classes. We'll have what we're calling SAGE classes, where the whole class is really AI. Mm-hmm. And then let's have something called artisan classes, where you have a touch of AI. So they presented it to me, and I said, done, let's run. And we announced it about 30 days later.
Incredible. So I'm making this up on the fly, but it seems like there are two different buckets of AI in education. One is the actual teaching of AI. Like, this is how large language models work. This is the foundational principles of AI. The other bucket is using AI in the service of other education. Like, hey, thanks to AI, students can better understand financial theory, and here's how optimal portfolio management works. And we'll use AI, and we'll use some kind of chatbot to create some Socratic dialogue. So if I heard you right, Dave, it sounds like the proposal from that committee was both of those buckets of teaching AI and also using AI to facilitate teaching other subjects. Am I getting that right?
Correct. And I'll start and then Angela can add. So we have different types of students. We have some folks like me who are fear tech, not a big user of tech. But if you're 22 and you're entering the workforce in the next couple of years, you need to know how to use AI in whatever you do. Marketing, management, accounting, et cetera. Then you have some people like Angela who are real tech people. They program. They will create tech products. They will manage tech products. And we will offer programming classes, technology classes, much deeper opportunities in ways that I would probably fail the class, but people like Angela would be really excited. So, but let me see if Angela wants to expand upon or fix anything I said.
Yeah, so it's a challenge, right? Because right now our AI is very broad. We have to supply the use case. And so we are a business school. We might introduce some of those more technical concepts to our analytics students or those who are in a slightly more STEM track. But at the end of the day, we really are here to focus on what's the ethical use of AI look like? What's the human-centric portion of it? And how is that going to affect every single domain? So no matter if you're finance, if you're HR, you're all going to be impacted. You have to use it. You have to learn how to use it. You have to talk the talk and walk the walk a little bit. And so as we integrate it into the curriculum, yes, there'll be some of it that is going to be, what is an LLM? How do you build a predictive model? How do we code in Python or R? But for all of the rest, which are more of our artisan flavors, it's those use cases, those business cases, the ethicality of it. What does it look like in the BAE program? So, you know, is it okay if we have AI voice clone Drake, right? So we're kind of encompassing both realms of the perspectives in the curriculum. It's not just that technical piece.
Thank you. It's super helpful. And just to get my bearings, what's the timing on this? I know you guys work very fast, especially in academia. But when did you start this initiative? And then when will it actually be implemented in curriculums, or has it already? Are there actually classes right now being taught that have AI embedded in them?
So we had conversations in November, December after the CEO spoke at our school. The committee met for the first time January 17th, presented the recommendations in early March, and we announced March 26th. We will have 20 classes in our curriculum for the next academic year that begins in August of 2024. At the same time, you know, even when I didn't even know about this, some of our faculty members were already using AI. So for example, we have a fantastic professor who's an expert in negotiations. She was using AI already this year for her students. So the students would need to practice negotiations with an AI tool. Make this argument. What are the weaknesses in your argument? She gave an assignment that said, all right, ask your boss for some additional responsibility and higher pay. How do you make that argument? How does your boss respond? Then have AI analyze the shortcomings in your argument. All right, let's make it more complicated. Now make your boss a total jerk, hostile. Like, we've all had terrible bosses. So you need to learn how to deal with a terrible boss, and you can give the AI tool a terrible personality so that you can learn how to negotiate with a jerk. So we have a finance professor that's been using AI to tools to teach finance students how to underwrite and evaluate stocks. So some of our faculty, and then obviously in Angela's department, which is our technology department, they were using it already. So some faculty are early adopters and were doing it even without a push. And others, we asked for faculty to raise their hands so they could change their courses for next year.
Love those examples. Angela, what are some more examples of how AI is being baked into the curriculum across a range of subjects next semester?
So some other examples. So in my iTech 200 class, we do a really big project called the eTech project. It's, we have to pick an emerging technology, identify a company who could maybe use it, and do a whole pitch to have our company investment. And year after year, semester after semester, I get a lot of the same topics because this is an intro class. A lot of students just don't even know tech. It comes at the very, very beginning of the semester. And so this past spring, I was like, all right, let's use AI to just give us some like examples. What's a technology or what's a company that we're interested in? What kind of tech might be disrupting that space in the next 5, 10, 15 years? And the breadth of topics that I got this spring, as opposed to like the past, much, much larger because they're picking on technologies that they didn't know even existed or just different creative endeavors that aren't anchored necessarily to a specific chapter in a textbook that they've read so far. Going forward, I know we're including it in all of our more technical courses as a way to help us write our code, whether that's Python, whether that's R. We no longer have to be at liberties of the syntax monster yelling at you because you put your comma in the wrong spot. So we can focus more on like building products, what it means, instead of focusing on is your semicolon in the right spot. I know, Dave, correct me if I'm wrong here, but we're building out one for the BAE program in particular and one for...
Sorry, BAE.
Oh, sorry. The business and entertainment program.
Thank you.
So we have a leading program. It's on the Billboard top business and entertainment school list, where students that want to go into the music or recording or movie or television industry, they go to Paramount and they work as agents. And so you recall the strike, the writer's strike, and AI was at the core of that because I could go to an AI tool and say, you know, write me a podcast for AI Curious using Jeff's voice, Jeff's questions, and develop a whole script.
That will save me so much time. Let's do it, please.
Well, it would copy your intellectual property, your creativity, right, and what you've done to create an industry-leading podcast. And so that issue is at the core of the entire entertainment industry. You could do, say, write me a Seinfeld episode.
Right, right, right.
And so our business entertainment faculty are doing a class on Taylor Swift AI and name like image and likeness.
Perfect.
And so that's a whole new class that 3 years ago, even the concept didn't even exist. So they're working over the summer to develop a new class, which they're going to roll out for our students next year.
Incredible. So what has been the feedback and reaction from faculty for this? As you mentioned, historically, academia moves slowly. You mentioned there were some in the faculty who were very AI progressive already and already injecting AI into their classes, but I'm guessing that wasn't everyone. And maybe there are professors who have little to no interest in using AI and how they teach. How have you dealt with that? And just more generally, how have you navigated the relationship with faculty while kind of working to push this through?
You want to start, Angela?
Sure. So it's a challenge, right? We have faculty on every realm of the spectrum in terms of our AI adoption, and some like it, some don't like it, some are wary, some are never going to change, some are have already been doing it for the past, you know, year plus. One of the things that we've put in place in my role is to train all of our faculty. So we have in April done two main events. One was we brought people from industry into one of our classrooms. We had all of our faculty, all of our staff there. And those industry experts were really just there to talk about how AI has been being leveraged in their domains, in their industry. And it wasn't there to teach our faculty of we have to use AI, but it was really just there to get the creative juices flowing and start embracing the idea of like, industry's already adopted it. Here's how they're using it. Here's how we can maybe start thinking about things inside our classrooms to better prepare our students for their career outcomes when they leave COGOD at the end of their tenure. The second event, we had one of our professors, Derek Cogburn, come in, and he did a good job talking about prompt engineering, how we all can be better at thinking about writing these prompts, creating these personas, and really putting ourselves in the shoes of the students who might not have any context or might not know how this stuff works. And then what we've started instituting is a monthly very light coffee chat, which is just a straight convening space where all of our faculty can kind of come on Zoom, talk about what they're worried about, what's working, what's not working, what they're really confused about. Oh, hey, we found this cool resource, or hey, there's this new tool, right? AI is ever changing. And even this summer, you know, there's rumors of GPT-5 coming out. There's rumors of all these things that are going to disrupt this space even further. And so that is a way where we can kind of just gather as a community and just start working through some of those big, hard rocks. What's the ethics of this? What's our policy on that? And just have a space to talk, honestly. And I think that's been, And I just think that's been like building the bridge and building the connectivity and starting to get maybe some of our more adverse faculty. Adverse isn't the right word, Dave. Help me out here. I'm not the words person. I do the numbers.
Reluctant.
Thank you. Maybe some of our reluctant faculty, you know, they're getting that space. They're getting the time. They can work through it. I think one thing that's challenging in academia is, you know, we have incredible faculty who are great researchers. They are at the top in their field, and AI might not be that for them. And so it's a new feeling. It's a little bit of, oh, this is the unknown. I don't know how any of this works. And they kind of have to start at zero. And that's just, I mean, that's not fun for me when I was a student. It's not going to be fun for them now. And it's just that growing pains of, you know, getting those building blocks up to be more comfortable with it.
Dave, how about from your perspective, handling the faculty reaction?
You know, I actually asked Angela to start because I wanted to see what she said, because we didn't. It's been overall very positive in my view. So I'll give you a few examples. Number one, I don't think an academic committee has ever done anything in 6 weeks. Sometimes you can't even form an academic committee in 6 weeks or pick the members. Number two, we had 20 faculty out of, we have 90, raise their hands and say, I will create a new course or I'll modify my course to incorporate AI. Number three, and we appointed Angela as the faculty instructional fellow. She's the youngest, coolest, hippest faculty member at COGOD. And she came from industry. So and she's put together these great training programs. And the first one, the room was full, standing room only, and we had over 100 people online watching. So I think the reaction overall has been great. I'll give you one other example. This is new, as Angela said. So we have a faculty member named Casey Evans. She is an accountant. She worked at Arthur Anderson. Then she worked at another company called FSI. She's a forensic accountant. She teaches forensic accounting at COGOD, at our school. She raised her hand and said, I'll incorporate AI into forensic accounting. So for those of your listeners who don't know what forensic, it's basically like, think about the Madoff trial or the Sam Bankman-Fried trial, when you're going back through all the financial transactions and unwinding what happened, who did what to whom, how do we recover this money, how do we find out the fraud? Mm-hmm. So in forensic accounting, you're literally looking for the needle in the haystack. Think about how powerful AI can be. Instead of having accountants look page by page for one little transaction, load it up in an AI tool, have AI look for it, and summarize it. So Casey Evans, Professor Evans, she's going back to school this summer to take a course offered by the Forensic Accounting Industry Association on how forensic accounting leaders are using AI in their trade. So she's an expert in forensic accounting. She's not an expert in AI, but she will become an expert this summer. And so I think that's pretty cool that a faculty member is becoming a student again, and she's excited about it.
That's very cool. And the more you share different examples, the more I'm starting to kind of get a sense of how this could look and feel. I'd love to kind of just unpack it a little more, though, sure, to kind of get a richer sense of what kind of AI in the curriculum means. And you've given some great examples, but are we also, it sounds like we're talking about having professors share with students ways that they can use AI to better understand concepts or to even conduct work, like in the case of forensic accounting you just gave. But also, it sounds like there's the question of a different almost format of education, right? Of how AI can help teach. Can you talk a bit about that part of it? Like, are you exploring things like chatbots and ways that students can interact with AI to kind of have a intellectual discourse? And Dave, you mentioned a great example of a negotiation, like almost a role playing of saying, okay, AI, you be the bad boss, and I'm going to ask for a raise, and we'll see what happens. Are you doing things like that for going to first principles to understand concepts, things like that? And is that just a one-off thing certain classes here and there are experimenting with? Or are you trying, is it a goal to have in most of your classes have some kind of AI-fueled platform to help the actual delivery of education?
The answer, I think, to your question is yes, we will get there over time. Let me give you an example. When the calculator came out, I'm sure there were many professors that said, hey, you should use a ledger. This calculator, you're screwing up thousands of years of learning of how to use an abacus or a ledger. Then when Excel came out, I'm sure many professors said, don't use Excel, use a calculator. And so AI, at the end of the day, is both a technology, but it's also a tool for doing everything you do, mm-hmm. sending an email, doing research, underwriting investments, proofreading, ideation. And so over time, it will be incorporated into everything we do, in my view. But let me see if Angela agrees or disagrees.
No, I totally agree. I remember last fall, Dave, I was in one of the meetings. I don't even remember who was all there. But one of the coolest things that I thought of at that time was I get emails from students at all hours of the night. And let's be honest, I'm a total grandma. I'm in bed by like 9 o'clock. I, you know, can't stay up late anymore as I used to. And I'll get emails from my students at like 2, 3 in the morning, and then I'll like address them in the morning. But how cool would it be if we could just have like a little GPT that we upload our syllabus in, and then instead of needing to come to me or to a TA at, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning, it would just give them their answer like in real time. So I've kind of been playing with that idea, trying to see if it would be reliable enough, if it would work. So I think we're on the road to getting there, but that's definitely a little bit of a bigger endeavor than just let's get it into the curriculum. Let's do what we can do right now. And then as this all evolves over time, we can do cooler and better things.
And then our career office is using AI to help students prepare resumes, to do research, to practice interviews, to prepare for the job market, to match skills. I went to lunch with this very senior executive at a top 100 company today. And he said they're using AI in their HR function so that let's say that someone applies to be a sales rep and that person actually doesn't seem that attractive to be a sales rep, but they'd be good in their operations department. They're using AI to identify the skill sets and send that resume over to someone else. So companies are always starved for talent and individuals are always starved for jobs and they're using AI to do a better match. And think about the efficiency gains and savings they can create from that type of technology.
Absolutely. Angela, you used a word a moment ago that felt very apt, and that's evolves. The space and evolving. The space is moving and evolving so fast. So how do you handle that challenge, right? I mean, I'm going to, at the most cartoonish extreme, and obviously no one would do this, but imagine if you created new textbooks for next fall's students that's like, talking about here's how to use ChatGPT-4, right? Obviously, that will be woefully out of date very soon and we'll be wasting paper and money and all that stuff, right? So how are you thinking about the fluidity of change and how to inject AI in a curriculum, knowing that it 2 months from now it could be very different?
So in regards of AI moving incredibly at an incredibly fast pace, so even if we're going fast, how do we catch up? So I think the first thing is that the way we're ingraining it into our curriculum isn't like set brand new classes. This has to be the only topic. This has to be the only concept. It's ingrained through activities. It's ingrained through case studies. It's ingrained through use cases. And so I think as the industry progresses, as this technology progresses, it's a little bit of like a plug and play where we can bring in a newer example. We can bring in a newer assignment. We can use a slightly different tool or the GPT-5 version instead of the 4 version or whatever it may be. So I do think the underlying themes of the core competencies that we want the students to get of like, what does a finance major need to know? What does an HR or a management or an analytics student need to know? Like, that's not really changing. What's changing is just those use cases, the exact tooling, the direction we might be taking with it. And, you know, it's something we're constantly looking at. We can evolve it over time again. So I don't know, Dave, if you have anything else to add on to that.
I would say the reason we appointed Professor Virtue as the AI instructional fellow in charge of training our faculty is because she's the youngest, hippest, coolest faculty member, and she'll be at the cutting edge of AI, of the changes, much more than someone like I would. So as AI changes, as the use case evolves, as new technology develops, think about how fast it's changed in the last year. She will be able to communicate and coordinate with our faculty so that our faculty can remain as current as possible. Now, we're not chasing the latest fad, but we want to give our students the tools to be more competitive in the marketplace, which also will be changing as well. Ultimately, you know, an educational institution like American University is delivering two products where we are providing research and knowledge to improve the world. And then we're training students and providing educational training for them so they can live interesting, full, productive lives. And hopefully this initiative is very, very student focused. There are lots of universities around the world that are doing a lot in AI that's very research focused. Let's have an institute. Let's partner with industry on research. And we do that. But this is a student-focused initiative. This is all about helping our students be better prepared for whatever they want to do next.
Speaking of students, I think the obvious question that everyone has when they hear AI education is cheating. And oh my goodness, no student will ever do their own homework now when you can have ChatGPT do it in 1.7 seconds. So how are you guys thinking about the challenge of AI and cheating, and how are you addressing that?
So I think the real question is, what are we trying to evaluate from the students? And are we actually doing that in the best way? I think what ChatGPT and, you know, generative AI as a whole has kind of highlighted is the traditional, all right, let's just take all of the information from a textbook, boil it up and regurgitate it in multiple choice questions, a little bit out of the question, right? Does that actually prove the competencies that we want to evaluate from the students? So I think one part of it is just us as instructors getting maybe a little bit more creative in how we can actually evaluate, and if we can push the rigor away from something that ChatGPT can do by default, and maybe add that layer of critical thinking, add an extra layer of difficulty to the assessment. So even if they're using AI on an assessment, it's not we're grading the writing of AI, but perhaps, you know, the application and their presentation.
Have you explored and had conversations of things like, geez, should we, and I'm just making this up, things I've heard floated out there, things like, okay, no more having students write papers on computers anymore. We're going to go back to the old ways and have like blue, I'm old enough to remember, little blue packets that you had to write by pen or pencil in class, or we're going to use oral exams. Are you thinking about different types of measuring in ways that AI and computers can't be used at all? Or is that like, okay, dude, that's overboard. Like, there are solutions without being that kind of draconian.
It's a mixed bag, right? I think as we've kind of discussed earlier, our faculty are all over the map in terms of how advanced and how we feel with AI. I do think we have been giving oral assessments throughout the tenure of COGA, just as our group projects, right? At the end of almost every class, you have a big group project. You have to stand up in front of the class and present the content that you did in your use case, your study. So I don't think an oral examination is like that scary or that different from one of the ways that we've already been assessing our students. I've heard people talk about, well, if we don't want the students to use the AI, then, you know, we can make the test in, you know, the lockdown browser. We can have it be in person, written, whatever it may be. But, you know, Dave, maybe close your ears on this one. I'm of the mindset of like, no matter what rail guards we put into play, there's always going to be some downfall, or there's going to be, you know, a different way that students could collaborate or cheat or do whatever it is. And so this is my personal instructor hot take, maybe. But I'm always of what's the main goal that we want to assess the students with, and is there just a better way? So in my really, really technical R programming class, all of my assessments are open book, open AI, open everything, because I don't care if they can write the code. I want them to know what it's doing and why we're doing it this way and how it works and the interpretations and the applications of it. And so I'm like, have at it. Use AI, write your code. It's cool. I don't even need you to write code on the exam. Because I remember when I was in school and I was taking a programming class, I, like you, Jeff, had the big blue books and had to handwrite my code. And then, you know, the comma was in the wrong spot, so you lost 1,000 points. And it was just not, it's not the student experience that I enjoyed. And I know it's not the student experience that our COGOD kids would enjoy as well.
Dave, what has been the biggest challenge so far in implementing this new framework?
I think the biggest challenge has been imagining that an academic institution can move this fast. That when I kind of laid out the goal and objectives, I think I probably got a lot of eye rolls from faculty and staff that had been around academia for a long time. But fortunately, Parthavan David, who's my partner and everything, he's the dean of faculty. You know, he'll forget more about managing and dealing with faculty than I'll ever learn, since I'm new to academia. He laid out a framework to get it done and then appointed the right people. And honestly, you know, Angela is working, you know, day by day at a more micro level than I am. But I am really pleased and impressed with the speed at which our faculty has adapted. And then the other incredible thing is the student reaction and the parent reaction has been overwhelming. So when we announced this, we had a great front page story in the Wall Street Journal featuring us. And the next few days I'd walk on the quad and students would stop me and say, I'm so excited about what we're doing with AI. And then we had a new student day where students that are admitted to our school and other schools, you know, that students in our school, you know, they apply to us and NYU and similar schools. The students and parents, they were so excited about this that this is pretty much all they talked about when they were on campus. So I'm actually pleasantly surprised that we didn't have more challenges, but I don't know. Angela's closer to the day-to-day, so she may be seeing things that I'm not seeing.
No matter how successful it is, no project flies through blue skies and cotton candy with zero issues, right? So what were some of the obstacles you had to overcome, Angela?
Look, like this technology is just so new. And so, yes, we're in academia. Yes, we're the experts. Yes, we're going first. But I don't think anyone has the answers. There's no magic book that's like, this is exactly what we should be doing. And so I think a lot of this is so far in our trial and error process, we've been on the successful side of the book. This is a really, really new endeavor. This is a really new initiative. And so I'm sure we're going to have some roadblocks going through. But I think it just comes back to, as long as we can iterate and iterate quickly and learn from the things that don't work and we can pivot, which we've seen us be able to do in the past, I think we'll be okay. But right now, like, we don't know. No one knows, right? And so we'll find out this fall once we launch all the new curriculum and see how everything goes. But I know we can adapt to anything.
We'll have to have you back as a sequel. after the fall, I'd love to hear how it's going.
Hopefully we'll still be in our jobs and we're not fired if it fails. So.
As we wind down here, I know there are educators and professors as listeners of this podcast. What advice would you each give others in academia out there who are thinking about these issues, who are grappling with, how do I handle the issue of AI? Angela, start with you. What advice would you give to professors or other folks in academia?
So I think from me being technical, it's just try. Find one piece of technology. Maybe it's ChatGPT, maybe it's Copilot, maybe it's Perplexity, right? It can be whatever it is. And just spend 5 minutes poking around, trying different prompts. Or if there's something that you do that's very routine or very automated, or there's a problem that you have personally, when we brought back some alums, one of the anecdotes that our alum talked about as the aha moment for them with AI was they just moved into a new house. They got a whole bunch of house plants and they don't have a green thumb. And so they created a little AI agent, then uploaded all of the information for their associated plants. And now when, you know, Lucy, the plant that they named, has a brown leaf, they can take a picture, upload it into their AI agent, and it'll be like, okay, you've overwatered her or you underwatered her, and here's exactly what you should be doing. So I think if there's something you're passionate about, a topic, something you're struggling with yourself that you know the internet might have resources for, just start trying it out and see what works.
I love that example. That is such a great one. I'm stealing that. And I plants myself, so I might steal that literally. Dave, how about you? What advice would you give to others in the space?
I think the key thing that I've tried to do is listen to people that are smarter than me in the private sector, and borrow their expertise. The private sector is so far ahead of academia, government, nonprofits. They're moving with speed. And so I've learned a lot from asking a lot of dumb questions to a lot of people that are experts. And then we've brought them in to train our faculty. So again, Angela designed this whole faculty training, but the first event we had a CEO, we had the head of marketing for one of the most famous content providers in the country. And then we had a 26-year-old former student who is using AI every day. And they shared their expertise with our faculty, and our faculty were like, I get it. I know how to teach this to our students, and now I need to figure out how to incorporate this into my class. So I, you know, I think one of the great techniques in being a good leader is to learn and rely on people that know a lot more than you do. And that's what I've done here. And they've led the way. And I've just, you know, synthesized the information and created a framework to get stuff done.
Love it. Last question, something that I ask all of my guests. How do each of you use AI in your own life, whether for work or for fun? Angela, we'll start with you.
So for fun, so I cook a little bit. I dabble in the kitchen every now and then. But when it comes to like Thursday, my inventory in my fridge gets a little wonky, where I just have random leftover ingredients, like a potato or like one piece of chicken. And so instead of trying to figure out on Google, like, what should I make for dinner tonight with all these random ingredients that I have laying around in my kitchen, I'll like throw it into the AI and have it pull and compile the recipes that are like the most compatible and like easy, because I don't want to spend like an hour in the kitchen. So that's been like the coolest, probably one that I've done so far.
Amazing. And for work, I guess you are, you know, creating entire framework for AI education. So there's that. But is there, all kidding aside, is there anything like, have you found any kind of like favorite hacks of like, okay, when responding to emails, I do this, or I use ChatGPT to do X in creating documents or what have you?
I have ChatGPT, as long as it's not like proprietary information. I have it like proofread all of my like emails and like content that I go out either to students or to other faculty. Because I, again, words are not my strong suit. And so being able to just upload it in and be like, hey, can you let me know what the weak point is this? Is the message clear? What do you think the message of this email is? Is the tone correct? Right? That's been super helpful on like the professional front, because as Dave knows, I'm a little bit blunt. I come from industry. I don't have the academia speak as well as some of my colleagues do. So that's definitely been helpful.
Amazing. And Dave, how about you? Ways you're using AI in your life?
So I, this summer, am doing a bike ride across the United States. It's an 8-person awesome relay race called the Race Across America. And so I've been using AI to help me plan the race, to help me think about intervals. So when we're going through the desert and it's 120 degrees, or when we're going over the Rocky Mountains, we'll do shifts of say 20 or 30 minutes. When we're on a flat road and we have wind at our back, we'll do shifts of 2 or 3 hours. And so I've been using AI to help anticipate the hardest parts of the race and the easiest parts of the race. And then also help plan the sequencing and when we'll sleep throughout the race. So it's been an incredible tool. It's gathering up everything that anybody has ever written or uploaded on YouTube, or anything that anybody's ever produced on these cross-country relay races. And I'm using it to help me think about planning.
These are all great, vivid, concrete examples. I love all this stuff. Amazing. Well, guys, thank you so much. I really enjoyed it. I'm super excited and curious about what you have cooked up at the university. We'll be following it closely. I mean, frankly, I'm not going to pretend to be objective. I am rooting for you guys. I'm rooting for this to work. I think it's great that you're having this forward-thinking, embracing AI approach. I think we can all, whatever field people are in, can learn from that kind of mentality and mindset of, and that's kind of why I launched the podcast myself. I'm like, as a writer, I'm like, all right, I can be like, oh shit, I'll be out of a job in 6 months, or I can lean into this and explore it and understand it better. And so I've tried to get mindset personally. And I think virtually anyone and virtually any industry and profession can take a dose of that, the spirit you guys have. So thanks so much again, and best of luck to you both.
Thanks for having us, Jeff. Really great fun to be with you.
Thanks, Jeff.
Well, there you have it. Thanks again to my guests, American University's Kogod School of Business, Dean David Marchik, and Professor Angela Virtue. I very much enjoyed this conversation. As I said, and I am not just saying this, I am super intrigued by this grand experiment. I do think that they are on the right track. If I had to bet or make predictions, I would guess that other universities follow suit. That feels inevitable that to some extent AI will need to be taught in the curriculum, need to be incorporated. Obviously, kind of nuance there, the question of how, and of course, Cobot is grappling with all of that. I'm sure they will iterate, I'm sure they will course correct and all that good stuff, but like kudos to them for going for it. I think it's very cool. Thank you again. If you enjoyed the podcast, please consider subscribing it, rating it 5 stars, forward to a friend, all that good stuff. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time. Take care.